show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here I am with Coyote Hair for all of our trickster spiraling out of conflict, initiating Mars. And Mugwort here, right? Perfect Saturn, Neptune. Mugwort protects boundaries and enhances dreaming, safe enough to dream. And also from herbalist Matthew Wood, passed on by my trickster training councilmate, Rita Fiedler, agrimony, the most reliable thing I know in herbalism of all things, says Matthew, is that agrimony will establish justice. Agrimony untwists the knots. They should spray this all over Washington, D.C. And we will, even during this hour, just for fun. So many things to address, but let's start off with Neil Young, comes through again. Big crime in D.C. at the White House. Here's Neil Young.
No more greed again. No more greed again. Got big crime in D.C. at the White House. Don't need no fascist rules. Don't want no fascist schools. Don't want soldiers walking on our streets. Got big crime.
Okay, that's Neil Young coming through for us again. Thank you, Neil. Great. Big crime in D.C. at the White House. We're going to sprinkle agrimony all around it. And remember that the Aramaic word that is translated to us as evil simply means unripe. So what do you do with unripe things? You put them in a giant brown paper bag. We're seeing a giant brown paper bag over the White House, over all uninitiated Mars, over the Capitol. There we go. To ripen it. So, yes, here we are. I always love quoting William Kittredge's fabulous lines from his homage to A Raven Rattle, where we see a human and an animal sharing a tongue, riding on the back of this raven. And he says, "Here we are, inextricably one with everything, however tricked, riding, in fact, on the back of trickiness itself." And we go, yeah, that would be true. So 9/11 anniversary, I have the chart with the transits. My colleague Dale O'Brien, way back then, said pointed out to us that Pluto, death, rebirth in Sagittarius and Arrow, was opposite Saturn structure in Gemini, Twin Towers. So the Arrow of death went into the Twin Towers. Remarkable, literal, mythic news. How else could we have played that, we might wonder. You know, and so it's the Jupiter return, happens every 12 years, but to 9/11 and the Jupiter return to America's chart as well. Time for a better guiding story. We're de-inaugurating all old stories, throwing them into Pluto's cauldron, and inaugurating a better guiding story. I'm very moved. Our word inaugurate, remember everything is sacred if we track the language back, comes from the augur, the diviner within all of us, who would walk out into nature, observe nature's patterns, whereby nature would reveal the responsible enough human, and then they would be inaugurated. So we want to inaugurate a better guiding story. So, yeah, and so there's the Jupiter return. You know, and right around 9/11, on this show and many shows, we did many shows on 9/11 with some responsible, you know, deep delving, like, wait a minute, there's some things to look at here underneath, right? And then it got taken over by the yelling truthers, really, who discredited the whole thing. But yes, there's much to still ponder, and Jupiter will be going back and forth over the midheaven of this, more stories. But for us to tease it into pertinence, you know, at the very least, it does seem that George W. Bush, you know, had advance intelligence about 9/11. He's like, oh, well, you know, that could be good for us, could justify our bombing Iraq, you know. So maybe we won't cause it, maybe, but we'll let it happen. Not unlike Netanyahu, for whom just reliable, you know, he had intelligence about October 7th, and he's like, maybe this would be, just let it happen and we can destroy life. Maybe we put that there. So we celebrate no death. We mourn all. And I think let's toss into Pluto's cauldron all assassinations. Conspirituality, which I subscribe and listen to, pretty great. Sometimes they overcorrect, but pretty great. They did a two-part series on Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a great Christian anti-fascist. And when he came to America from Germany, he just fell in love with authentic Black spirituality. He spent time and was mentored by Black ministers in Harlem. He went to the Deep South. We're going to bring this back up as an antidote that we need now. And was just smitten by the profundity and soulfulness of Black spiritual church in America, where he found redemption. He decided to go back to Germany because he said, well, I have to participate with my citizens in the rebuilding after this horror. With great moral conflict, he joined a plot to assassinate Hitler, and that got him executed weeks before the end of the war, depriving the world of his deep compassion and egalitarian brilliance. So we go, maybe assassinations, not a good idea. Still uninitiated Mars, no matter how dedicated and profound. So a friend on Facebook wrote a pretty profound thing on Charlie Kirk, right? And so we celebrate no death. We note, we like irony. We like irony and its relationship to compassion. To be ironic requires holding at least two stories at once, what is and what should be, which is part of our assignment in perpetuity, and or what is and what people are pretending it is, right? We want to be creatively suspicious. And to be compassionate is to have the capacity to hold more and more stories at once. So Bruce Fenger starts off, Charlie Kirk, when the joke writes itself. He says, there's a line Charlie Kirk once delivered with the certainty of a man who never thought he'd be the punchline, who said, I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights. He likened gun deaths to car crashes, an unfortunate toll we pay for the freedom of mobility, as if a school shooting were the same as a fender bender. Remember, there was a school shooting the afternoon when Charlie Cook was assassinated, and we go, Charlie Kirk was assassinated. We go, and also as a sideline, not celebrating, but Charlie Kirk said, you know, he wanted to have public executions where children were made to watch as a form of schooling and schooling them in obedience. His own kids were there and his wife to see him shot. And we go, oh, no. And then back to Bruce. He says, the thing about dark irony is that it doesn't wait for a satirist's scalpel. Sometimes history itself leans forward with a wicked grin and says, And so at a UDOC college, as Kirk was fielding a question about mass shootings, a bullet answered more decisively than he ever could. And it's dark, right? So here was the man who preached that liberty comes with a price, suddenly forced to pay it in the most literal way. The philosopher's stone of American conservatism, the Second Amendment, as sacred scripture, turned on one of its own prophets. The self-appointed guardian of God-given rights. Yeah, let's kill all the gay people. Just many things. His exit chart seems to forgive him. We presume no certainty in these mysteries, but I'll bring in a few things that we might choose to animate. So, he goes on, and it's good. And he says, in the end, Kirk's death doesn't change the argument. It embodies it, right? The man who claimed some must die so that others may feel free has joined the ledger he once tallied so casually. And in the end, I can only say with the utmost sincerity, thoughts and prayers. and then Charlie Kirk had also said, with Elon Musk, right, I can't stand the word empathy. Actually, I think empathy is a made-up New Age term. Okay. Elon Musk said that too. We're going to honor Mars in its woofy positiveness, what it represents, and Mars in its uninitiated toxic form that seems to be running the show. So again, we celebrate no death. We mourn all. So let's toss all assassination into Pluto's cauldron. I love the comedian Brian Kiley, who says, people say, would you kill baby Hitler? And he said, no, here's the thing. Also, the assassination that we want, all assassinations, and absolutely, we must remember, Melissa Hortman and her husband and their dog, right, who was assassinated. We honor all, we grieve all. And the killers also, all the small and large horrors, the killers left the dog to bleed out so that their children, when they arrived at the house, the first thing they had to deal with was their dying dog and take it to a vet and have it put down. We go, cruelty, the cult of cruelty. We're here to throw, let's take the cult out of culture and the cult of cruelty, which is uninitiated Mars and tantrum yoga and all of those things, lighthearted and not. So we're in the dream news, because part of assassination into the cauldron, because it never really works, because it's an avoidance of the larger assignment. It's why I'm not completely comfortable with the Trump death watch, wishing him ill, all of that, because the larger assignment is to understand tyranny as compensatory weeniedom and a grotesque animation of a nation's shadow. So here we are. And quoting esteemed colleague Reverend Ike, if we can dream it up, we can dream it down. So onward to Mars as our host. Mars is our host this hour. Mars is in Libra now, which old fogey astrology goes, it's in its fall or its detriment. Because Mars, it should be, rules Aries, woof, and in Libra, the realm of Venus. And it's like, you colonized astral beings, right? And it's like not to have even an opinion about the planetary dance. It's just an assignment. It's not I like this, I don't like this. But Mars in Libra is the realm of Venus. Venus liberates Mars. We are convening our emergency council. And again, words. The word deliberate comes from Libra. And two verbs, Librare to balance, and librare to liberate. So to be deliberate is to be in a state of liberating balance. We are gathering now to deliberate. And tracking liberating Mars, Venus liberates Mars. Sometimes these things are so literal. There's a sculpture of all the planets outside the Kennedy Center, and there all the planets are anchored, but it was a couple of days ago that Mars broke free of its mooring. These people were filming it, and you can find out all this in the program notes and also on Visionary Activist Show Patreon Visionary Activist Show, where you can see Mars escaping the Kennedy Center. It does. Mars breaks free in the wind, escapes the other planets, and rolls down the highway. And you can hear the people going, "Look, Mars is on the highway," right? So the news truly is mythic, and it's a great video. You can probably just Google it, but I have the link. So we can start many places in the story of how did we get here and what to do, these different forks in the road. And one fork, remember, Mars is woofiness and heroism and passion and desire and the color red, you know, and the note C natural, and it's spices, it's you know, heats things up. So on a cold day, have cinnamon tea, right? All of those things. But it's also our kinship with animals, our wise animal in the fairy tale that knows what to do when the mind does not. So one fork in the road that we want to examine might be when the Greeks got rid of their animal deities, a primary expression of Mars in fairy tales. So let's toss the hubris of humanism into the equinox eclipse cauldron and ladle out the truth of animism, which is not a belief, it's just good manners. But for now, let's begin with Wernher von Braun, right? You might have heard this if you're in my Monday Trickster Council or the splendid shift course, Becoming Agents of Liberating Trickster, that just finished, you know, or I've probably said it on the air, but I think it's really important. So Wernher von Braun, you know, and thanks to Tom Lehrer for the song that we have played often. After the war, Wernher von Braun is a Nazi war criminal who makes rockets and enslaves the slave labor in the concentration camps to do so. After the war, America invited Wernher, going, "You're our kind of guy," to Alabama to start what would be NASA. And Wernher was obsessed with going to Mars. And he wrote a science fiction novel called Project Mars that delineates democracy is a stupid idea and technocracy, that's where it's at. And in this novel, Mars has a dictator whose title is the Elon. And Elon's Nazi grandfather and father read that novel and are inspired by the novel to name their son, grandson, Elon, hence the name, right? So Elon Musk is named after a dictator on Mars in a dystopian science fiction novel written by a Nazi war criminal, right? There's more. Von Braun's other science fiction novel is Conquest of the Moon. Are we tracking a theme here as well as the mowing down of the Rose Garden in the White House, the, you know, Mars with no Venus, Mars with no Moon? But wait, there's more. So Bill Barr, Trump's attorney general, presided over Epstein's death. I like saying Epstein died of Epstein Barr. And Bill's dad, Donald, gave Epstein his first job teaching at the prestigious New York City teen girl Dalton School. Surrounded by young girls, yeah, there we go. And Epstein had no education, right? Didn't finish college, right? But he's given his first job by Bill Barr's dad, Donald. Donald is also obsessed with going to Mars, and he wrote two science fiction novels. In 1973, Donald Barr published a novel called Space Relations, a science fiction novel about a planet ruled by oligarchs who engage in child sex slavery. Holy bleeping Maury. There's more. I put links in it too, and another novel, A Planet in Arms. But it's about, you know, men, oligarchs need young girl sex energy. Right? That's right there. It's all right there. So we are living in an uninitiated Mars, 14-year-old teen dystopian science fiction novel. And that's why I welcome the kind of positive Mars 14-year-old of Gavin Newsom, you know, trolling Trump and South Park really trolling Trump. And it's like, that's good teenage Mars delinquent anti-authoritarian wolf. We welcome that. But it gets us into infantile Mars, Trumpel-Skiltskin, Hegseth, and the ilk, and the Department of War, right? And it's like, and Hegseth just said, you know, he was having a press conference with, or whatever, you know, with Trumpel-Skiltskin, right? And again, remember, tyranny is compensatory weenydom. And so Hegseth says, lethality over tepid legality. Violent effect, not politically correct. We're going to raise up warriors, not just offenders. This War Department, you know, has no more wokiness to it. And we go, right? And then today Trump was on some pronouncing venue, and he said, now all the, you know, the great people, the slow police who showed up down at the 7-Eleven. Yeah, he called it 7-Eleven. There we go. All right. Okay, so much for Hegseth over there. But renaming, I mean, it was called the Department of War, and then they changed it, right? Because they were like, that weenie, you know, Truman, right, who bombed, did terrible things, but he's a weenie, no, we're taking it back. And years ago, a friend of show, Jamie Yeager, had said, well, we should rename all the departments more accurately, like the Veterans Department should be the Department of the Maimed, right, and the, you know, Department of Defense, you know. So there's a horrible cartoon honesty coming out here. So we go, yeah, so what to do, right, and what's available to us? And we go, well, it's equality egalitarian fest. It's eclipse season. The lunar eclipse is just behind us. The companion solar eclipse is September 21st, when very excellent, good Mars, Bill McKibben, is calling Sunday. And he was excellent on Democracy Now! This morning, going, darkest time in American history I know about, you know, and renewables and green energy, you know, terrible here. But in the world, things are brewing. And it reminds us of the guiding narrative, you know, which takes no belief, you know, just to note the thing that we're in this Pluto death rebirth in Aquarius cauldron, which has a sextile, a 60-degree angle to Saturn and Neptune in Aries, a community that welcomes the unique individual, welcomes them, you know, and Saturn and Neptune then have a 60-degree angle to Uranus in Gemini, the importance of communicative freedom, you know, liberating language, lest we leave it by default to the Dementors and Peter Thiel, also Mars-obsessed, right? They want to go to Mars rather than be positive Mars, right? It's infantile. I mean, I know NASA people who are about to lose their jobs, you know, who really do want to go to Mars, and it's like, oh, okay. Not till you've cleaned your room, though. Not till you've cleaned your room. And the Peter Thiel cabal, J.D. Vance, all those, you know, inquisitional oligarchs, you know, they know that the temperature on Mars is minus 220 at night, right, and pretty roasty during the day. They want to reconfigure a select group of oligarchic humans to be able to live in that world. And it's like, but they have all this money, right? It's a completely absurd, infantile, but they have all this money to do that. All right, so Bill McKibben is good Mars, is calling for Sunday all across the nation. You know, and how affordable solar panels are. And he's got a great riff, and you can listen to it on Democracy Now! Bless his good Mars self. The Mars in Libra, good being, you know, is dedicated to liberating the whole community. So what he delineates then is not needing to speak astrology, but saying, you know, it's a dark time, but we could ladle out of this horrific cauldron, you know, astounding change. And we go, right. So that's the day before the equinox. On September 22nd is the equinox, when Ami and I will be animating the equinoctial guiding story that night on Zoom, 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, 8:30 p.m. East Coast time, by donation, by whatever. You can find out about that at coyotenetworknews.com or Patreon Visionary Activist Show. So it's an equality fest. Eclipses happen because of symmetry. The sun and the moon are the exact same visual size in the sky on this planet. Right, so it's an assignment. And it won't always be true. We won't always have eclipses because the moon is moving slowly away. There we go. In a million years, we won't have eclipses. But for now, the assignment is equality. And equinox, September 22nd, but close enough, September 21st, and yay, Bill McKibben being his great wizard self, animating that for all of us, equal night and day, equal humans and the rest of our kin, equal Mars and Venus. And there was a profound, you know, the women ovifying, well, women can't testify, right, because the word testify comes from testes, a women ovifying, and that was, you know, September 3rd, you know, with Mars in Libra rising at 17 plus Libra, which is accountability, men placed under arrest. And we go, that's great. We're going to just sneak in Marjorie Taylor Greene, a little bit of astoundingness that what she just had to say. So here's Marjorie Taylor Greene. Marjorie Taylor Greene, oh, I'm not sure. It's not Ghislaine Maxwell. It's Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm not sure. It should be there. Yes, MTG.
Called it a hostile act. I put my life and my fortune on the line fighting to get that man elected. Well, that coward attacked me and attacked anybody else and called it a hostile act. The hostile act was Jeffrey Epstein raping 14-year-old girls. That was the hostile act, and it's not a hoax. Every Republican should be able to sign on to this.
Astounding, right? Astounding, right? I mean, the comment sections is great because it's like, whoa, it's, remember, it's a very tippy time. So Marjorie Taylor Greene was moved by the women ovifying. She may not understand the full complicity of her former guy, Trumpel-Stiltskin, but nonetheless, she was moved to speak out on behalf of these authentic women, many of whom were Republicans, right? The comment section is adorable. Somebody in the comment section said, wow, Marjorie Taylor Greene speaking sense and for justice, agrimony wafting around her. The commentator said, not on my bingo card. And then they added, I used my bingo card to light a blunt. And we go, yes, there we go. So yes, that's an astounding thing. And I think we can slip in, this wonderful, wonderful woman, brilliant Lisandra Vasquez, who does fabulous satire of Carolyn Leavitt, and just follow her on TikTok. She's a genius, positive, comedic satirist, really great. But here's her doing Ghislaine Maxwell. Here we go, Ghislaine Maxwell.
There is no list. Well, I need to be ready for it. I'm practicing. It has to come off natural. You've never done theatre before. I'm out of practice. When I had to do all the procuring of the young girls, I was really in my prime. I wanted to be an actress, you know that. I'm not aware of any blackmail. I'm not aware of any blackmail. Blackmail. I've never heard that. I never saw it. I never imagined it. Gentlemen in all respects. Now that one's funny. I'm gonna have to work on that one. Gentlemen in all respects. Tony, he was not a gentleman, but gentlemen in all respects. That's the line. Gentlemen in all respects. You ready for me?
It's genius, and she dresses up as Ghislaine, and just I can't recommend Lisandra Vasquez enough. That's so wonderfully great. And there was also a secret recording, a Department of Justice, pretty high up kind of guy, just talking to a stranger, you know, who's like, what do you do? Who secretly recorded him saying, well, I go through the Epstein files and we're purging all the Republicans out of it to just leave the liberals there. And he goes on and delineates the thing. Again, this is a revelation time, a Uranus revelation time. I'm not completely comfortable with calling the the Epstein women survivors. They're more than that. They're revealers. I like the Epstein women revealers as part of the dynamic. So we're going to go to break music, which I think is an antidote. It's fabulous John Lee Hooker, great Delta musician, artist, blues guy, super wonderful. His wonderful song, Boom Boom, and we go, this is the boom boom we want, right? All the uninitiated Mars, the internal combustion engine, boom boom, even the Big Bang metaphor, how about the slow, swooshy unfurling, and we know that we could have, you know, engines that were silent, it's just that uninitiated Mars wants the boom, the loud thing, and it's like, no, we're here to transform that, to have a better guiding story. So John Lee Hooker, I think, you know, it's like Dietrich Bonhoeffer found redemption in Southern Black spirituality. And so may we. I feel it's just such a great medicine to now hear John Lee Hooker blues song, Boom Boom. Here we go. Whoa, welcome back, allies. This is the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. That was John Lee Hooker with the medicine positive boom boom, right? Let's replace all cruel boom boom and the infantile fixation on explosions with John Lee Hooker's boom boom, you knock me dead right off of my feet. That kind of sexy, profound, you know, all of that. Yes. Well, right now, the martial arts, Mars, woof, art Venus, right? That is what we want, you know. And so it behooves all of us at this tricky time to not be hoodwinked into reactive conflagration, to not provoke, to be tricksters spiraling. And the guiding planets, you know, Venus is the morning star. I was at the beach with the dogs, a wonderful, wonderful, crucial thing. I feel 800% better. We're all still exhausted, but anyway. But I did get to get up before dawn and to see Venus and Jupiter rising in the east before dawn, like, oh, gloriousness. Right, this is important that we maintain our sanity with the whole larger picture. There's Jupiter exalted in Cancer, you know, and as it was in 9/11 and as it was when this country was founded, it's exalted. It means history and dredging, composting tyranny and dredging a better story, you know, from that over and over again. But it's the Venus part. I just want to remind all of us, you know, Venus in Leo right now at 20 Leo, which is drunken chickens, the sacred clown. That is the way to do it. So seeing Venus rising in the east and where she is in this part of the mythic cycle, all cultures had their Venusian myths. You know, in the East Middle East, it's Inanna. In Mesoamerica, it's Quetzalcoatl. So Venus is both genders. And it's always about, you know, the return of culture back to humans at a time of danger. That's what the myths in Sumer are about 2,500 years ago. So when Venus, as Inanna, emerges as she is now from the underworld, the Sumerian poetry, I've told this a lot, you can chant along with me if it's familiar, the Sumerian poetry of 2,500 years ago is very trippy and racy. And it says she's recovering and she's lounging around going, wow, that was underworld intense. And she's contemplating the wonders of her own vulva, right? And she goes, oh, it is so great to be a woman, whether you have a partner or not, doesn't matter. And that's when the idea, right, here's a revelation, the idea comes to her, a liberating revelation, which is available to all of us if we're contemplating our vulva. She has a liberating revelation. She goes, I know for my overland adventure, I will be liberating trickster, culturally liberating trickster. Enki, the god of wisdom, who has become a tyrant, very important, the Sumerians, very sophisticated. Anyone unchallenged will become tyrannical, even the god of wisdom. So Enki, the god of wisdom, has become a tyrant, and he's stolen human culture and left empty celebrity baubles in its place, toxic mimics, and they really speak in that way. And so Inanna gathers her best friend, Ninshipur, and they get into their little round coracle boat, and they sail to Enki's island, his island, right? Okay, the myths are always humming there. And being woman hero, interested in liberating the whole community, she doesn't go grr. She doesn't go grr. This is important, team, for all of us. She gets him drunk on beauty and poetry and playing John Lee Hooker in the streets, right? As Enki gets moved by culture, right, he gives back to her culture that he's stolen called Mies, M-E apostrophe S. And interestingly, the first thing he gives back to her are the erotic arts. I give back to you the erotic arts. It's Mars and Libra. It's Mars and Venus dancing together, equal. You know, so I give back to you the erotic arts. And then here's some other stuff I took. You know, here's writing and astrology and future radio production and real estate, you know, I mean, poetry, everything. And Inanna puts it all in her little round coracle and sets sail. And Enki wakes up in the morning and goes, says to his assistant, you know, where's human culture? I know I put it here somewhere. And his assistant says, you got drunk, you got out drunk. You know, and there's Inanna and her friend, you know, in their little round coracle on the horizon. They're taking human culture back to humans. And so Enki does send demons after them. But Inanna, Venus, part of all of us, is so pumped up by the success, the liberating trickery, you know, that she fends off the demons with alacrity. And that's how Venus Inanna brings culture back to humans. And then humans can have a wise Renaissance culture of humans humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius. that's the 2,500-year-old myth, and that's what's being played in the sky now. We go, right. And it's important, you know, how did we get here? Because, you know, I was part of Pacifica's team. Yay, team. Yay, Mitch Jezrich, wonderful team leader, covering the Republican convention in 2016. Doing the mythic news. And Venus was just about to reemerge from the underworld, the heliacal rise. You know, and here's the Mesoamerican version. So in Mesoamerica, Venus is Quetzalcoatl. And Quetzalcoatl is doing okay, you know, but then Tezcatlipoca, the Lord of the Smoking Mirror, says, you know, you're getting old here, you know, drink this balche, drink this narcotic intoxicant, this power, control, dominance intoxicant, you'll like it. And so Quetzalcoatl does, and he does terrible things. He sleeps with his daughter. He makes deals with corporations. He does terrible things. And he wakes up in the morning going, oh, I've done terrible things. And he goes away. And the culture would understand it as leadership has become so corrupt that it must go away. And we, with it, to a deep place, like now, to define what positive leadership is. And then Quetzalcoatl would return at the heliacal rise of Venus, when Venus first emerges, rising before the sun. People would watch for that. And an unfortunate twist of historic fate is that Cortez shows up on that day. And many of the Mesoamericans mistake Cortez, the horrific thug guy, for Quetzalcoatl, right? And during the Republican convention, that myth was happening in the sky. And I went around talking to all kinds of people. They were good individually, but collectively it really was like Shirley Jackson's lottery, you know, kill things. And we don't need to know the myth to be possessed by it. In fact, if we don't know the myth, we're possessed by it. If we know the myth, we can choose autonomy in how to play it. But I doubt that any of the Republican attendees or even anybody, any of my colleagues, knew the myth. But I was watching it going, oh no, it's Cortez. You know, they're mistaking. But the myths live endogenous. We have endogenous receptors for the myth, you know. And everybody mistook, you know, the God, or the wise leadership returning, meant to be in every heart, in every mind, in every heart. Not one guy. Meant to be a restoration of wise cultural leadership. But they mistook, you know, the guy, the vulgarian Trump, for Quetzalcoatl. They didn't know that, but you could see it. And so there we go. So that's the value of mythological literacy, team. And we have a few more fun things to play, just because it's all one story. It's all one story, right? Because we have the Epstein, Bill Barr, Elon Musk, Mars science fiction novel story that we delineated, you know, in the first part of our Kahoot here. So here's just a piece also from Clay Tiffany, delineating another crucial story. Wait for the end of it. And again, this is uninitiated Mars that we want to throw into the cauldron, assassinations into the cauldron, thuggery and violence and brutality into the cauldron. So here's Clay Tiffany. I think it's called that. I hope it's called that for you, but we only have two more to go. Oh, wonderful Kirsten. So here we go.
Never underestimate the butterfly effect of a tiny public access show in upstate New York. Clay Tiffany was an independent journalist and the fearless host of Dirge for the Charlatans. Notorious for being a thorn in the side of local officials and law enforcement, Clay Tiffany would probe into corrupt politicians and dirty cops, then broadcast his findings on his public access show. But with this fame came enemies in powerful places, one being Briarcliff police officer / bodybuilder Nicholas Tartaglione, who in 1997 pulled Clay Tiffany over, warned him to stop looking into the police department, said he has ties with the mob, then physically assaulted the TV host. Obviously, this led Clay to delve further into the cop, and so began a long-standing feud between the two. Tiffany dug into his past and found that Tartaglione had a history of assault in his time as a police officer. Clay Tiffany would slam him and the BPD on Dirge for the Charlatans, and in retaliation, Tartaglione would find him and beat him up. This happens at least four times, with the last confrontation putting Clay in the hospital. He would host the next episode from his hospital bed. Clay sued the police department, winning a big settlement, but Tartaglione was never charged or found guilty of a crime. Until this story goes somewhere I never could have predicted. Clay Tiffany passed away in March 2015 of natural causes, and the following year, Nicholas Tartaglione was arrested after killing four men over stolen drug money and burying them in a mass grave in the woods. Tartaglione, now facing a life sentence, has been behind bars since his arrest, where in 2019, he was the last person to share a prison cell with Jeffrey Epstein.
It's all one story. It's all one dream. If we can dream it up, we can dream it down. It's all connected in some way, which is why one of my favorite ally clients was a forensic psychiatrist, right? And her job was to go into crime scenes and maintain imaginative relationship with the guilty. She'd said a wise culture would understand a horrific crime as belonging to the collective, that there is no simply private crime. So she would use many examples, but she said she would be called into crime scenes where children had killed their mother. And she goes, well, we are killing our mother. Right? This was profound work. But that model, it's like when Bali, before Bali went sort of QAnon, little cuckoo part the thing. But before that, you know, when they had their terrorism there, the culture itself is profound, you know, animistic, and looks within. When they had horrific bombings there, you know, after 9/11 here, the nation had a come to soulfulness moment. They were like, what in us, you know, was so out of kilter that allowed this horrific thing to take place? And there was a profound, you know, kind of introspection going, you know, what have we done? Did we betray, you know, for tourism? Did we betray our sacred, you know, tending of the land? Did we, what left a breach? You know, it's like, you know, Positive Mars, the flotilla, you know, all those people, Positive Mars, Uninitiated Mars, Netanyahu, the cult of horror, you know, the cult of horrific cruelty, right? And it's part of a mystery that we explore. You know, does the oppressor, unbeknownst to the oppressor, actually seek the medicine of what he or she is oppressing? You know, we just go into play here, many stories, but I have always, you know, being Irish heritage, but also kin by affinity, you know, the Irish say, you know, the Palestinians are the Irish of the Middle East. Brilliant poets, brilliant culture, brilliant tied to the land, brilliant endogenous indigenuity, you know, and it's like, Israel experiment could have used it, but it's like, no, tyranny hates community. Tyranny is the toxic mimic of community. And we see this everywhere. We see this right now in America. You know, and also I just want to, you know, honor the DC, you know, my home city, here we are, you know, to call on its magic. Its magic is the one of the recent, you know, outpourings was all the bells in the city were ringing. All the bells of all the churches were singing. And when DC was designed by Masons, by ritual magician wizard Masons, truly, like not a, really, 16th Street was designed, it was lined up, it ends in the White House, or Lafayette Garden in front of the White House, and it was designed to have churches lined up all along it, and spiritual, and psychics, and and that's how it happened, in fact. And so, as this city, you know, poured out, all the churches on 16th Street and everywhere, you know, and all the spiritual history of the city, you know, were all ringing, and poetry and hip hop and music and dancing and woofiness and people showing up to just walk ICE out of the neighborhood. You let that person go. There you go. And we want to invite all to leave tyranny. Remember, Pluto's stationing degree, 2+ Aquarius, is deserter from the military, following their own wilderness path, following their conscience, right? Everyone, even Marjorie Taylor Greene, for bleep sake, you know, we go, right. I often think that, you know, tyrannical buffoons, you know, grotesque animations of the worst of American shadow, if Trump were to meet himself, he wouldn't put up with himself for a minute. And it's like the fantastic series, What We Do in the Shadows, really outrageous. Again, 14-year-old boys trolling in a great way. But there's the energy vampire. Oh, the name will come to me. Many of you know it. Rodney. Anyway, he's an energy vampire. And he says, if I'm low, I can just go on the internet. And within 10 minutes, I can have hundreds of strangers furious at me, and I feed on it. Let's keep this in mind, team. You know, any click, right, feeds the oligarchs in some way, right? But whatever his name will come back to me. Anyway, the energy vampire, somehow it's a long thing, but he splits himself into two, and one of the ways he feeds is to bore people, right? And so he splits into two versions of himself, and they bore each other to death and dissolve. And we go, I think that's a great image. You know, let tyranny contain the seeds of its own demise. Just go at it. Bore each other to death, you know. But keep in mind, you know, because out there in social media or on the streets, you know, it's hot. You know, we are here to cool out the conflagration with mugwort and agrimony and prayers for safety and well-being and actual community and mutual aid, you know, rising up. And to not be... Yeah, I want to use I want to toss the use of the word triggered in psychotherapy into the cauldron, because that makes one a gun, right? Let's throw all war metaphor into the cauldron. You know, how long will we have wars? As long as we keep using war metaphors, that's how long. So so triggered, right? So it elicited the thing. And you know, even just for all of us to tease into autonomy. Autonomy is a sacrament. Just to go. Yeah, to be, what do we want to be agents of? Agents of cooling out the conflagration. Agents of invitation, because you never know. You know, again, the fabulous movie, Lives of Others, you know, again, it's a decades-old movie, but it's, you can tell from the moment it starts that it's really, really dedicated. It's about how the sociopathic heart can bloom again. Not everybody, but you never know, to leave room for others to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways. So in the liberating language realm, we have one last clip, but it's really useful. It's Coach Oliver, and he's speaking on reframe. Here's reframe.
Don't say I'm stressed. Say my body is preparing me to rise from this challenge. This reframes stress into energy, turning cortisol into courage. Don't say I have to do this. Say I get to do this. This shifts the brain from pressure to gratitude, increasing motivation. Don't say I'll try. Say I commit. Try signals doubt. But commit programs the subconscious for a follow through. Don't say I'm bad at this. Say, I'm still learning this. Your brain loves growth. This rewires failure into progress. Don't say, I don't have time. Say, it's not my priority. This brutal truth exposes what you truly value. Don't say, that's just who I am. Say, that's who I've been, but not who I must stay. Identity is flexible. This creates mental freedom. Don't say, this always happens to me. Say, what can I learn from it this time? This stops victimhood and activates problem-solving mode. Don't say I don't know. Say I don't know yet. This adds growth mindset, tricking the brain to search for answers. Don't say I'm nervous. Say I'm excited. The brain cannot tell the difference. You control the framing. Don't say it's impossible. Say it hasn't been done by me yet. This opens possibility and dissolves mental barriers. Don't say I can't do this. Say how can I do this? Asking questions activates problem-solving circuits. Don't say I failed. Say I've discovered one way it doesn't work. This resets failure into data. Don't say I'm stuck. Say I'm pausing to reset. This turns paralysis into preparation, reducing anxiety. Don't say they lucky. Say they created opportunities. This shifts envy into responsibility and empowerment. Don't say I wish, say I will. Wish signals helplessness. Will directs action. Don't say I'm overwhelmed. Say I'm prioritizing. This gives the mind order instead of chaos. Don't say this is hard. Say this is stretching me. This frames difficulty as growth, not as punishment. Don't say, I don't belong here. Say, I'm learning to belong here. This destroys imposter syndrome with progression language. Don't say, why me? Say, why not me? This turns suffering into strength, unlocking resilience. Do not say, I've lost everything. Say, now I have the space to build better. This transforms despair into renewal, psychology of rebirth. So, just keep that in mind.
Just keep that in mind. That's pretty great. I don't know. I don't know if you got a few things from me. I don't know, or if it's just so obvious that whatever. You know, for decades I've been working with got to get to, because got to is outsourced Saturn or authority and creates resistance. Some of us know this well, which it leads itself to procrastination. I've got to do this. I get to do this. It's a Jupiter thing. I get to do this thing. And then I've been in love with the word yet for eons, but I don't, you know, Coach Oliver's doing a great job with it. Yet is a small word that is like a key that unlocks things. Like we haven't had democracy yet, right? And then just a little bit, you know, say I'm excited, he goes, I prefer enthusiasm myself to excited, excitotoxins or chemical stuff. But enthusiasm, enthusos, means that which makes the divine within us dance. Right, so team, we're here to do blessing, to gather our wits, that we be responsive, not reactive, you know, and even just a little bit from Charlie Cook's assassination, September 10th, 12:24 p.m. in Orem, Utah, after which there was an earthquake there for mysterious reasons. It's not to presume, like, who did this, but it's like, well, what's the exiting? What are we gleaned for? Overhead is 2 Virgo, whose image is a guardian angel watching over a couple in the wilderness. And we go, may that be for all of us. May that be for all of us. You know, and may that be for Charlie and his journey and these mysteries, I presume, no certainty. Venus overhead at 19 Leo, whose image is Zuni Indians perform a majestic ritual to the sun. I don't think it's about Charlie Cook, but it is an instruction to us. Whatever we ritualize in reverence, we need not literalize. You know, and this violent reactivity and cruelty, you know, into the cauldron, you know, for all beings. And we gather our safety, you know, mutual aid transcends polarity, spirals us out of polarity. May we all be, you know, agents of liberating and reframing. And Saturn Neptune says, when you come up with something desirable, it says, let's see it. Let's see it. And let's, as we deconvene, oh great ally team here, blessings of safety and respect for all life. Whew, there we go. Thank you so much, Kirsten Thomas, always deep spirit sister. You can find out, again, Equinox, coyotenetworknews.com, Equinox, Ami and I are convening, and also Patreon Visionary Activist Show. We will reconvene next week. Thank you all, team.